Brent and Chris Yonsky.
Yep.
Thank you for coming in today.
Appreciate it.
With TJ Welding Fab, I'm going to say out of Houston, Texas, but I know I'm wrong. Where are you guys out of?
About an hour southwest.
Okay. So going back to my Houston days, we got the inner belt, we got the outer belt. Yep. And so is that the Sam Houston, the larger one? Mm-hmm.
Yep,
is that Beltway 8?
It's actually 99 now, Grand Parkway.
Is there another outer belt?
Yes.
Is that done?
Outside, yes.
Okay. All right. What I loved about Houston is no matter where I was going, it always took 45 minutes. And the drive, when you go over the U-turns you guys do under the overpasses, we don't have those. So
Mm-mm. Oh, yeah. Those are great.
Yeah. Well, you guys are used to them. Mm-hmm. When I started renting a car there, and I was totally messed up. But anyways, besides the point. Okay, TJ Welding Fab, what are you guys? Who are you guys? What do you do?
Welding and fabrication, essentially sheet metal fabrication. We build a lot of hydraulic reservoirs, HPUs, which are hydraulic power units, skids. We actually manufacture a cable tap box for apartment complexes. That's something that my grandfather worked on back in the day and ended up getting the blueprints from the original designer, and we've been manufacturing those since the 80s.
For the uninitiated, what is a cable tap box?
So from basically these go to apartment complexes or, you know, multifamily housing, townhomes. Essentially, if you look at it as the apartments will run their electrical from the meters in underneath ground and come into this box. And then your electrical provider, like for us, it's CenterPoint Energy. They'll come in and they'll go to the other box, the other side of the box. There's aluminum bus bar inside that's been tin plated. That bus bar then, you know, basically sends the electricity and powers everything. So it's like a splitter or a transformer in a way.
So it sits above the unit level breaker boxes.
Yes, it's a ground pad mounted.
Okay.
Yep. And so basically if, let's say your apartment doesn't have power, they're going to go to that box, they're going to open it up, and they're going to test it. And they're going to be like, okay, well, I've got power coming to it, so it's the apartment's problem. Or I don't have power at it, so it's CenterPoint Energy or, you know, the electrical provider.
It's kind of like in your front yard. Is that lateral line where that's broken right now mine or theirs? It's always ours, you know.
So these are mainly at apartments.
Okay.
They have started transitioning into more homes because it's only a 1600 amp single phase.
Mm-hmm.
The reason that they're transitioning is because of all the bad weather. You know, power lines go out and stuff. And your
safety?
Yeah, I think it's just preventative.
Okay.
So they're allowing it to be used. We're actually on a vendor list.
Oh, good.
So we've submitted all the stuff, which, you know, Dad and Grandpa did back in the day. Then someone calls us because they're building or, you know, doing new construction or a replacement, and we're just one of the vendors, and we've made a lot of boxes over the years.
So right now for TJ Welding Fab, what are jobs that you're currently doing? You don't have to name names or anything, but so if someone's got, where I'm going is if someone's got something they want to do, what makes TJ Welding a good fit, and as far as what you guys might be able to do for somebody?
So, I mean, anything from metal.
Okay.
I'm real big on getting the blueprints, you know, reading them, building it. We've got so many jobs right now in the shop going on, but
what's an example of a job that's currently happening? Is like commercial side, residential side? Is it?
Everything would essentially be like commercial. So I kind of see TJ Welding as different divisions. So I've got one division, which is going to be the oil. That's going to be, you know, some of the bigger companies building hydraulic reservoirs, enclosures for different things. Some stuff may go offshore. Some stuff may go to different countries. Some stuff may be used here. Some stuff for the government. Then the other divisions would be our cable tap boxes. That's been around forever. Then we do like metal art. That was kind of one of those things that I just tried it, I guess. And I don't do as much anymore.
And that's play it on a CNC type of thing, or?
Yes.
Okay. Yep.
Bought the plasma table I guess.
In 16.
Yeah. And
yeah, because remember, I didn't want you to get it.
Yeah, he didn't want it. It was computer based.
Yeah. Get that out of here. Yeah.
He did not want it.
Old school.
Yeah.
So finally wore him down.
Mm-hmm. How long did it take to wear him down in general? I'm thinking year minimum.
I don't think it was quite a year.
No.
It was just giving him examples of what it can do.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, I just wanted to make cool shit. I wanted to make some signs. I wanted to do that. So I basically, he didn't see.
He didn't hear profit. Business plan when you said cool shit.
Yeah. So when I told him, I'm like, hey, you know, we build these hydraulic reservoirs or tanks, and it'll have a whole bunch of different fittings. Well, the fitting has to go, or the coupling has to go through the whole tank, be welded. Well, back in the day, they would shear the piece, then they would go punch all the holes on the iron worker, or they'd plasma it out. I'm like, dude, just throw a sheet on this table. I draw it up on the computer.
Bang, bang.
Zoop, 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 zoop. Yeah. And
you saw that.
Yeah, I did after we got the machine.
Yeah. Okay. So you were a bit on faith.
Yes.
And you guys still using that table quite a bit?
Yeah. We still use it a couple times a week.
Okay.
So we are going to upgrade to a laser, our fiber laser that we ordered last year. It's in the new building, but it's not operational yet, and hopefully next month.
How big of a table do you guys have running on those?
So the plasma's a 4x8. That was just kind of, that was my first actual big purchase, you know, kind of taking the reins, and I couldn't really afford the 5x10. So we went with the 4x8. Outgrew it so fast.
Did you?
Oh, yeah. It so many times I needed to throw a 60 wide sheet on there, and instead I'm having to refigure things or go over to the shear, cut the 60 wide down to, you know, make it fit or something. So with this new laser, it's actually a 6K, and it is a 5x10. So I'll have it now.
And you are getting that for a reason, which is you're seeing jobs out in the market where we could hop on those if we had that kind of capability. So do you guys have a bread and butter, would you say? You're like metal. Yeah. Metal's our bread and butter.
Yeah. No, it's been the cable tap boxes for so long.
It fluctuates. I was going to say the cable tap boxes, but that goes up and down too.
Okay.
Depending on new construction of apartment complexes in the area.
Mm-hmm.
Like when one division is super busy, the other ones may not be.
Got it.
For example, an election year. You know, nobody's financing $1 million apartment projects. So there's not that many boxes being sold. Versus, you know, the beginning of the year, everybody's figuring out budgets and everything with our other customers. So we've been fortunate of how busy we've been for a couple years now. But yeah, it's almost they favor each other in the sense of when one side is super busy, the other one's kind of steady. And then, you know, vice versa. So
if somebody has a job that requires welding and fabrication, you're not kidding. Like, you guys, they should contact you.
Yeah, we can do it. If it's metal, stainless, aluminum, or your carbon steel, we can do it.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. Well, let me ask you, we know what you guys are today, and I want to dig into a little bit, how do we get to today? So your father and son sitting here, and I understand you represent the second and third generation of TJ Welding Fab. So Chris, tell me, how did the company get started?
Back in 1983, my dad worked in Houston, where me and my mom and my brother lived, and that was back when that oil field crash kind of happened. And he was vice president of a big, you know, corporation there, and decided to move back to his hometown and start his own business instead of working for somebody else. And in 1983, April of 83, actually, moved us all back to his hometown where he was born and raised and where he was from, and started up the business. And I pretty much was there with him from the beginning. I was a young kid at the time.
Were you about 15 or so?
I would have been 13.
13. And so this is back in Wharton?
Yes.
Okay.
Wharton, Texas. Yep.
So he just kind of said, well, I'm going to strike out on my own.
Correct.
Okay. Correct. And what do you remember about early days? Was it him just sort of like my mailbox fell off the post out in the front yard, or was it more job-based?
He had the knowledge, and he brought a guy with him that he worked with, you know, in Houston for years and years and years, and they started building barbecue pits and trailers, and then we started doing a lot of work for local farmers and ranchers on their combines, and then the city of Wharton needed their fire truck, a cab added onto it,
and we did that. Cab.
Yes, sir.
Wow, that's not nothing.
That was pretty cool to see pictures.
Very cool.
We've done all kind of stuff in there from day one. Started in a little corrugated barn that my grandfather,
like the Quonset hut, kind of thing.
No, it was corrugated, but we still had a pitch on it.
Okay,
but it
gotcha.
Was just had corrugated, galvanized. Anyway,
that would have been the fourth generation in that building.
He was a mechanic. He had a mechanic shop in there. And I didn't know my grandfather.
Okay.
My grandfather died when my dad was 10.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So I didn't know my grandpa. But anyway, so my dad moved into that same building, and that is where it started. And it was a little bitty, small area.
How much space did they have there?
When we started?
Yeah, like in that shop. How much space did
30 foot by 30 foot?
Okay. Not a lot of storage space.
No.
You made it and got it out of there.
Correct.
Right. Got it. So how long was he in that shop? Do you guys still own that place? Or
it's still standing.
Still there.
We still use it today.
Still using it today. Yep. So when did you start working with TJ?
When I was 13.
Okay.
He would set me up in the machines, and I'd sit there and run parts through the machines.
Okay.
At that age, run the saw in that bus bar for those cable tap boxes.
You're making them all the way back then.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Yep. That was kind of his product.
Got it.
Like Brent said, he had acquired the blueprints from the fabricators that built them before.
Mm-hmm.
And then we took off, redesigned them, got certified with, you know, center points so we could get on their vendor list and started making them.
That's a nice niche, to have.
Yep. It is pretty cool.
You know.
It's been going for 40 years.
Do you know what refinements you made to it? Do you know how you changed the plan at all? You said you had blueprints and you made some changes. Do you remember what those were?
Huge ones. He did most of the changes after I left.
Okay.
A lot of the doors and the way they latch and close, and even the insulator of electricity that's inside the box is not even the same compound anymore.
Okay.
It's a total different.
Was it one of those boxes that had like the padlock thing that slid out the bottom? You had to push it down. Like,
it was a little bolt. It was a little
originally.
A little bolt with a little tab on it. They put a lock in.
Yep. Know that one. And so you upgraded the usability of the box as well as the functionality.
Yeah. Mainly because we had to.
Standards.
So as the standards changed with what we had to do, I'm a firm believer in if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, in order to be a vendor and be on their list for people to buy from us, you know, we had to basically do what they said. So the standards changed, you know, had to go to a 3-point locking system. So no longer could just thread in that nut and bolt and, you know, put a lock on it. The box grew in size a little bit, you know, attaching all the insulators and stuff on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
We've also added to where the box itself can be grounded. The bus bar, which is an aluminum that's tin plated on the inside, that's grown in length. It's powder coated now, not painted.
Right.
So it's
more durable, more weather, you know, resistant.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it
all things wear down eventually, but
everything's going to rust down there, though.
Yeah. So you're starting there at 13 years old, and are you thinking, did you know how long you'd be there at 13? And you ended
I
up
did you know, not, but I knew that's what I wanted to do.
You enjoyed it?
Oh, yeah. Me and my dad worked side by side until the day he retired.
Wow. That's really cool. Yeah.
And he was actually able to retire at, I think he was about 45, 46 years old.
No kidding.
When I took over him. And that was in 97, 96, 97.
So if
In between building front shop and back shop, probably.
Yep. So we got to start the kids young. We got it so that when we're 45, we can get out the door. Yep. Well, good for him. That's great. So you took – how old were you when he was retiring?
27.
Okay. Were you ready to take the reins at 27?
I felt like I was pretty much. Yes, I'd been on the floor for all my life and then got moved into more of the office setting, you know, how the business runs, quoting jobs, ordering material. You know, he just kind of taught me, you know, worked me in there. And then all the employees now kind of worked for me when he stepped away. So,
and that's a big deal. That's things a very big things deal. That are easily said, but to have a shift like that, now you've got all these people that are used to kind of working for the old man, and now they're working for you. And is that going to transfer okay? And are people going to be okay with that or not okay with that? How was the crew?
It was really good. It transitioned just fine. You know, we had a couple, you know, of the older guys that were, you know how it works, you know, boss's son, you know, coming in or whatever. But
I know how that works.
Yeah. But it wasn't bad.
Well, it's a real thing.
It wasn't bad at all.
Yeah. Well, I think that speaks to that you had put in the time on the floor and shown people like, okay, this isn't just – he happens to be the boss's son, but that's not all he is.
That is correct. That is the way it went down.
Yeah. And then also you kind of, regardless how you feel like it, feel about it sometimes – he's also the boss.
now he is.
You got to snap in line a little bit in regard to put your feelings aside sometimes. But so your transition went pretty smoothly there. And what did you want to do with now you've got it? It was something when you were taking over. And what did you think was the path? Keep going.
We grew. We added on two more sections of the back shop. After I took over, and then I was able to get new customers, still keeping some of, you know, dad's old ones. I went out and found new customers, and that was a big thing. And also that was when I was the one that actually certified the cable tap box with CenterPoint.
Okay, that's a big deal.
Yeah, because he didn't getting have sewn that. In. Yes. Yeah, so I did that also. Took it to that level.
And how long did it take to get that certification?
It wasn't that bad. Probably about a year or so.
Yeah.
You know, they have to come down and check everything out and then build it to their specs, their standards.
Mm-hmm. And is there wiggle room? I know you've been able to refine it over time, but it's a minimum spec that needs to be met?
Yes.
Okay. Yep. So you can overbuild it.
And we do.
Okay. Yep. Oh, yeah.
There are a couple components. There's actually a phenolic insulator in there that we go and offer a higher grade than what they're requiring as the minimum.
Okay. And is that born out of durability, safety, or?
I do not know.
Okay. I mean, you're the reason you upgraded.
I didn't do the upgrade. Oh. They did.
Okay.
Yeah. It's what was offered from our plastics place.
Yeah. That, oh, gotcha.
That supplies us with the sheets of, well, it's called phenolic.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's what we've always called
it. It used to be called Benelex back in the day. Like I said, now it's a different one.
Mm-hmm.
And it's what they offered to us. And then when the standards came out, it just happened to be above what they required.
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah.
So now you can say, like,
yeah, we've used same stuff. Yep.
We exceed the minimum requirements. Mm-hmm. So you went out, got the new customers. You got TJ certified to make the boxes.
Correct.
What was there a certain type of customer that you were kind of seeing like we should be going and getting those guys, or it was kind of you're out putting your name out in the market? And
well, one other thing I did do, we've got ABS and DNV certified. Yep.
Okay, so tell me about that.
DNV is it stands for Det Norte Veritas.
Okay.
I was building the cement units for these drilling ships offshore, and they have to be lifted off of, you know, a barge onto a rig or ship or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to do that, it's just a certification. It's like
literally just to move it.
Correct. Correct. Okay. So they don't want to lose it off in the ocean somewhere, basically.
Fair enough.
So it doesn't drop off in there.
Yeah.
So that was a big thing. We were able to pick up I was able to pick up a lot more jobs having those two, you know, certifications. And it's weld cert. It's the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, I don't know, 7.3 certification for DNV.
Yeah, it's a couple different numbers. Mm-hmm. But basically, when that happened, all the welders at the time, you know, would take the test, get the qualifications. You had X-ray, a few other things. But it required to where if a job calls for it, it sets us above any other fabricator because we have that ability.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a, you know, weld startup, so they'll send out an inspector, you know, inspects, make sure we're using the right wire, process, everything. Then we weld it out, then they come back out, and then they'll do like a pull test. So they'll essentially get a company to come out, try to rip it apart. And I think on average, it's like 60,000 pounds. It's got to hold for 5 minutes, and then they'll do a mag particle test on that, which is just your die with the mag yokes, just seeing if there's any stress cracks or anything like that. And if it passes, then
all's good.
Yep. They'll sign off, get a little special tag, and we ship it out.
So how did the welders feel when you came here? Like, guys, we got a test coming up. We need you guys to kind of – here's some manuals. I need you guys to – we got to pass these tests.
Well, for me, there was only three of us that qualified to that procedure.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
At the time, so we weren't a big shop back then.
Yeah, you weren't like holding classes and
right now
doing all that. So you were at the helm from what year to what year?
I'm gonna say 97 to, we talked about this, 16, yeah,
we did.
16,
17. Right Harvey. At Harvey.
Right at Harvey.
Harvey was when he was right. Like kind of stuck this under
Hurricane Harvey.
Yeah.
Okay, so 2016.
Was that 17 was Harvey, I think.
So you guys were hit hard by Harvey, I'm assuming, in southwest of.
Got my house, got my business, got my mama's house. It got us all.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wiped it out?
Yeah.
We rebuilt the shop, or he rebuilt the shop, I should say.
So you just took a look at, and you're like, good luck. Not good luck, I'm still here, but
right, yeah,
right,
good time correct. For me to sign off.
Yes.
I want to say maybe about 80% of our town was underwater.
I didn't realize that.
I would say, of course, I'm rounding up, but about 36 inches of water is what, you know, there was some areas that you could barely see the roof of the house, you know, in single-story homes. But we had quite a bit of water, a lot of equipment that was just completely submerged. And I actually, at the time, lived in a single-wide with my now wife. And I sent her out. I was like, go to your parents. And so she did that. I stayed. There was airboats just riding around in the front yard. I mean, it was
that's a bad dream.
That was crazy.
Oh, yeah. Never would have expected
it. How long was
it.
The water there?
A couple of days.
It was.
I was landlocked out in the country for about 4 days before I could get back to the shop in my house.
Really? Did you have provisions for that, or I mean, you were fine?
Oh yeah, we were okay out there.
Okay, but the properties got wrecked. Did they end up getting demolished and rebuilt, you were able to kind of do some remediation and get them put back together?
So I will say that, man, I have an awesome group of friends, and they all came together, showed up, and just started ripping out everything. So, I guess we went up 4 foot, and just ripped out the office. His house at the time was on the same property as the shop.
Mm-hmm.
So they came in, ripped everything out of that, helped kind of just tear everything apart. One of my buddies had a concrete company. He came in and was like, hey, I'll do your floors, you know. And another company vendor that we were using, they donated some material. So we actually, we have aluminum diamond plate on our walls, you know, 4 foot up in the office.
Yeah.
And our guys came out and they understood. I mean, we've always tried to take care of them, but that was something that happened that nobody could have predicted. Everybody was displaced. So there was a few days that they knew we weren't going to pay them, but they came out. We just started going through everything, seeing what was salvageable, what wasn't. All the local businesses kind of came together. For an example, you know, we had coils on some of the welding machines and a couple components that I didn't have the ability to clean or recoil or anything like that. And a few places were like, hey, I've got an extra one and this and that. So everybody kind of helped each other out.
Were you surprised by that?
No, not in a small town, not in our town.
Right.
No, everybody, it's one of those things, you go to HEB, which is a grocery store,
yeah,
and you may go in for just a couple things, but it takes you an hour because right. You run into everybody. Everybody waves, you know, when you're driving by and stuff, so.
Yeah, kind of the steering wheel wave.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, I know that. I know the wave, you know. Mm-hmm. You live in a small town for a lot of time, and it's really nice. You know, it's, you know, you come back to a bigger town, and it's kind of like everyone's in such a hurry. But, you know, it's an adjustment either way. So the whole town comes together. And,
oh, for sure.
And gets everyone back up on their feet.
So
when everything's back on its feet,
well,
you're on.
To touch on that note, so majority of our machines were underwater to some extent, except that plasma table.
Okay.
Everything on that plasma was lifted up. So to help us with a little bit of income and to use some of the metal that was underwater, we started making some Texas Strong signs. That was a real big thing, you know, stickers, all that at the time. So we actually did those, sold them, and then $5 of every sign went to a family that didn't have the ability to rebuild.
Right.
So we did that, and we sold hundreds and hundreds of them.
Wow. That's fabulous. Because you're able to pay some of that forward.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yep. So it helped us because it gave my guys something to come back, start working again, and it helped out a family in the end.
Mm-hmm.
But, we shipped to a whole bunch of different states. And
that's so cool.
It was cool because I can still drive around town. And granted, this was, you know, 7 years ago?
Starting to be a while.
You can see them signs.
Yeah, you can still see the one in the McDonald's.
Oh, really?
In the local McDonald's. Has one, the local, you know, lawn shop. Mm-hmm. I mean,
cafes,
restaurants. Yeah, it's all. So that was.
And you can
cool.
still probably see the watermarks, you know, or you know, we have a flood that was here in '93, and you can still go to certain parts of out in the valley, and you could people have like will have taken paint and said watermark. You know,
there's a couple of spots in the shop.
In the shop, still the see old it. Shop.
Yeah,
there is.
Mm-hmm.
There's still the watermark on the wall.
Yeah, it takes you right back, you know, because it's very different. I mean, this is a bigger town, but I remember in the flood of 93, and I was not that old. I was born in the 70s, but we were all stacking sandbags, out in a part of the St. Louis where I don't think I've been back, you know, but everyone just sort of got off their ass and did things like that, even in, you know, a larger town, which is always good to see, by the way.
But nobody expected that. I mean, even Houston came together. People came from all around Louisiana, you know, helped out. But really, nobody expected the water to get that high. There was people that actually brought their cars to our shop because they thought that our shop was good. We did.
Really?
Yeah, I lost my Corvette.
Oh, God.
Honestly, I would have lost my Sportster, but it was next to a forklift. So as you could just see the water just
You just lifted up. It up?
It came up really fast.
I put the Sportster underneath the forks, and I just lifted it up, and so didn't get to that. But
that's better than saving nothing.
That's right.
You know? So what kind of Corvette are we talking about?
So that one was the 2009. And it was, I guess a C6.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, no Z06. It was just, you know, standard Stingray. Loved it, 3LT package. Wife actually got it for me for my birthday. And then we lost that. Insurance really took care of us. I know some people got screwed, but that's where it kind of helps to have good insurance policies.
Yeah.
And we didn't have one for a while, but we started missing it. So we ended up buying a new one. It was a 2014, so new to us.
Yeah.
And that one was a C7 white, still 3LT package and everything. Not the Z06, but had that for a while, and then we ended up buying a house, so I sold it.
Yeah. Well, that happens to us all, right?
Responsibility.
So, yeah, you're like, well, I guess I can't do that anymore. Yeah. But so hurricane comes, and it sounds like Chris is walking out one door. How long have you been working there when this happens?
Since 14.
Okay.
So it's been about 3 years.
3 years. Mm-hmm. And had you told him leading up to that, hey, you know, sooner or later I'm going to be signing off? Or was it kind of like, hey, man, you went to bed on a Friday night, told him on Monday?
It happened really fast. And it's funny that we talk about this because there never, even with Dad and me and then going to him, there never was like a date or a time or a month or a year. It just kind of, we just kind of phase out, you know, one just like.
You just know sort of thing?
Yeah, and I know when it's time.
Yeah.
You know, just doing the exact same thing me and Dad did. It's like. I knew he was ready, and like I said, that was devastating to me.
Yeah,
and I'm like, okay, I'm done now.
So you're on. He's done. You're on. And so, what's that like for you? I mean, that's a lot.
Yeah.
That's kind of like also an oh shit moment.
Oh, without doubt. But it was one of those things that I knew it was going to happen eventually. After college, you know, was working at the shop, pay off student debts and figure out what I wanted to do. And then I realized this is what I want to do. It was eventually going to happen. It was just, hey, it's time to step up sooner than later. I will say I didn't have that luxury of being in the shop for years to kind of earn the respect of the guys and work hand in hand with them, as far as I was only there for a couple, you know, 3 years before this happened. But I knew I had some big shoes to fill. And I was going to do everything I could to make sure that we came back not only the same but better.
Were there people there when you took over that knew your granddad?
Mm-hmm.
There are. Okay. So they've been there. They know the whole deal. And so you're stepping in. And, so were you received relatively well by the crew? And or you kind of like, guys, just got to trust me for a bit. I'm going to get us where we all want to go.
Well, I guess right now we really don't have anyone other than David.
Yeah, there's only one left now.
But you fired all.
No.
They all retired.
Yeah. They all retired. Okay.
But I will say this, that employee number one, the guy that actually left Houston, came to Wharton with my grandpa, he came back to work and worked for me, or with me.
Really?
Yeah. So employee number one actually worked for all three generations.
That's remarkable. Why did he do that?
I don't know.
He didn't like, he's old school. He didn't like being retired.
Okay. Yeah. So I can't do this front porch thing.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Needed something to do. And it was funny because he laughed because I guess when I was a little punk ass kid,
right.
I'd run around the shop and say, I'll fire you, you know, and every kid's a punk ass kid. But the fact of, I never saw myself at the family business, and looking back, I wouldn't change it for the world. But to be in that position where like, hey, Bernard, I can fire you now if I want to, you know, but yeah. I never did. And
You know, firing's not as cool as it might sound when you're sure, when you're younger. It's like, no, this, you start, it's a family. Mm-hmm. And you start thinking about things very differently. And it ties into the idea of all the help that everyone is willing to give one another. And I think about that as, you know, I manage, which is if something like that happened, you know, do I have a team here or do I have people that, you know, are just, as soon if something were catastrophic going to happen and we weren't able to make payroll, let's say for a maximum of two cycles, am I create an environment where everyone will want to help each other, or am I creating an environment where they're like, well, see ya.
Right.
You know, and I know that's sort of a vacuum thought, meaning that there's reality also, but you the concept of firing is not an attractive one. It's not something you the kind of culture that you generally want to try and create, sort of that you want to have like a smooth, nicely well-running, take out any volatility if possible, which is not always easy to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a trait that I'm thankful that was passed down, was to understand that your business would not be where it is without the guys in that shop, that's without correct. The employees. Like, to understand that, you know, they're essentially what makes the company what it is, and you make sure that they're taken care of and everything works right. So yes, everybody, even myself, has an employee number, but to me, that's not who they are.
Right.
You know, they're David or they're Gabe or they're Mark or, you know, Bernard. And like, to me, that's their name. And it's essentially extended family. We had a guy that started for us that first week. You were still in charge, but his brother had passed away and they needed to get to Florida. Shit, my dad pulled out his truck keys and said, here,
go. Yeah, get on the road.
Family comes first.
And it was probably a no-brainer.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. Like,
he's still there.
Yeah, get out of here. He's still there. Take the keys. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like so what did you study at school, by the way?
Started out in business.
Uh-huh.
At the University of Nebraska.
Uh-huh.
Loved it. I wanted to get as far away from Wharton as I possibly could. Loved every aspect of it. Made some amazing friends. Uh-huh. Then stopped going to class.
Yeah.
Ended up going back home. To answer your question, I ended with a degree in communications with a minor in business.
Okay.
So.
You know, class is one of those things, once you start stopping to go to class, it's easier to continue stopped.
Yeah.
It's like, well, I still did pretty well on that test. So
yep.
Anyway, so how'd you get back to Wharton? Did you finish school in the town in your town?
Yep.
Okay.
Texas State. Well, in Texas State.
Okay.
But back in Texas. Okay. So yeah, so I, Nebraska, you know, out of state tuition.
Sure.
Was astronomical. So ended up moving back. Went to Austin for a little bit, did some bartending, mm-hmm. and then I wanted to get some form of degree.
Yeah.
So at that time, GPA was a little low.
Yeah. It's easier to get them low than high.
Oh, absolutely. But so Texas State, essentially known as a party school.
Yeah.
I got in, did some classes. Communication was kind of the degree that they would let me into.
Yeah. And no, your sights were on get a degree.
Right. Yes, and it really was because, like, he doesn't have a degree,
mm-hmm.
and my grandfather didn't, my grandma didn't.
Right.
It was just kind of one of those things that I had started.
We're just going to get this done.
He wanted to see me have something, so.
No, I understand what you're saying. so you went back and now, okay, so that was a sidebar because I mm-hmm. was interested just in general. So you start taking over, you're at the helm, and what are you kind of at the outset? Did you have thoughts on, okay, here's where we are, and maybe in 5 years is where I'm trying to be, or were you just kind of playing whack-a-mole for a while, trying to just keep it all going?
At first, it was just, let's try to get back to as close of a normal as we can.
Mm-hmm.
And then it became, our customers, you know, started coming back, understanding that, you know, lead times obviously grew as we were trying to rebuild. So that all started, you know, things started getting back to a normal. It wasn't a whack-a-mole. It was just what machines do we need to replace right now and which ones mm-hmm. do we not?
Just getting the house in order.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And we did. And then work just started and I focused on what my dad did and what my grandpa did, which was quality work.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I understand if I quote something at 20 hours and it ends up taking me 30 hours, well, that's just what it takes. I'm not going to sit there at hour 18 and rush through it just to hit 20 hours and miss something. Or I'm going to make sure quality is going to go out the door.
Yeah.
And that set us up for where we are today.
Yeah. Well, that's... bad quality makes its way through the market pretty quickly, mm-hmm. you know. And I think people recognize when people generally know if you're sort of reaching hours or you're going over hours. And mm-hmm. if you've done the right thing, they'll be back, you know, and they won't be too, you know, they're not going to be too upset if you're like, hey, we learned something that first time around and you got me. You didn't get me, but we all know what happened. And, mm-hmm. and I just hopefully you guys will be good next time, you know.
But I will say one experience, you know, because I started having to quote the jobs and everything and only having 3 years experience in the shop, you know, labor and all that, it was a learning curve. And there was one job that I remember the customer came back and they were like, hey, why are you at, you know, $19,000 when this other company, I think, was at like 11? And of course, at that point, I'm still new, green. I'm freaking out like, man, did I miss something? Did I go too high? Do I adjust? My dad walks in and I was telling him about it and he was like, no, you know what your value is. You know how long it takes to do something. You tell that customer, appreciate the opportunity, go have the other company do it. And they did. And it was what, 6-7 months?
Yeah, what long.
That job ended up in our shop to fix it. And it ended up costing them in the end more than
that the old 19, saying, 000. Which I always mess up, which is like, if you think we're expensive, yeah. wait till you see what it costs to have, you know, a yeah. non-professional okay. do it.
But that was a good experience just to see that, like, you know what your time and your value is worth and you know what you're producing.
And so we have a father son here. So what is your, you said earlier, you're like, I'm from the old school. And are you guys, how are you managing digital right now as far as internal systems? It sounds like, you know, you guys had a plasma table, so that's clearly not a hand crank thing. Yeah. And you're not feeding, you know, punch cards into it. So what is your position on digital as far as, you know, even fabrication distribution? You have information or inventory that's coming in. It's generally being marked up or moved around, doing things with it, and then it's being sold. And then move somewhere, you know? How are you guys, what is your position, I guess, on digital for maybe, generally speaking, fabrication, welding industries or companies?
Well, I mean, on the business side,
mm-hmm.
The technology in that is, it's making it more efficient, better to track things. You know, back in the day, you know, you get a phone call and it's like, hey, remember when we did this job? And you give out a part number. Well, he or, you know, our office manager at the time, they would have to go over to the filing cabinets and they just have to just start sitting there just, you know.
Anybody seen that full?
Yeah.
Yep.
That's and exactly it, where now I started to where I scan everything in.
Okay.
I am still old school in the sense of I don't run like a AutoCAD.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to learn, but I'll still do, you know, hand drawings and stuff like that. But I've learned the plasma table, which is a 2D CAD software or, mm-hmm. you know, CAD CAM. And he didn't even have a computer. Yeah. So
basically mine was all pencil, paper, ruler.
Yeah, the adding machine on the.
Yes.
The tape.
Oh, I still have
it. Did you have a tape or did you go without the tape? It'd be like rolling off the, the paper.
Yeah.
Oh,
my calculator.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
how it was all like that. And all of his stuff is all now digital computerized from all the machines that bend the material, cut the material.
What do you think of that? You're like, today, if it works for you, great.
No, today I think it's amazing because I got to see it with my own two eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Back when he would pitch it to me, I'm like, that machine costs too much money. I don't want to spend that much money on
that
machine.
It's scary.
It's very scary.
Yeah.
Very scary.
Are we going to get anything out of this?
Exactly. But I'm seeing the big picture now.
Okay. And it's that if you've done your homework on whatever piece of technology you might invest in, that it can be a real asset for the company.
Absolutely. 100%.
Yeah. And how long, what was that arc for you? I mean, you worked at the company, you said 96, 97, 2016,
mm-hmm.
something like that. So, you know, a good slug of time. And when did you sort of open up to the idea that digital is probably going to be occurring?
Was probably that CNC plasma machine, a table. Because mm-hmm. that was all CNC at that time. And that was in, what did we say, 17?
16.
16.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're like, you know, plus or minus 10 years into it. And because an interesting thing, Brizos being a digital platform. So when the company first started, we're reaching out, we're talking 2018 or something like that, and reaching out. And many companies are generational fabrication companies or, you know, local supply houses. And so you'd have a father, son. So we'd reach out and talk to the son, and he'd be like, guys, I love what you're doing, but the old man will never go for this shit.
Yep.
Ever. Ever. Yep. And so so the son doesn't move on. We're like, well, let us, can we talk to the old man? And so the old man, you know, picks up the phone, and he's like, we should probably do it. It's what these damn kids want. You know, so they both were sort of pointing at each other. Mm-hmm. You know, the dad sort of saying, hey, we gotta retain talent. We gotta have systems that people wanna use and aren't sort of unnecessarily arduous to deal with. And so it's been interesting to watch from our seat how this is all sort of converging, just people's attitudes. And part of that is that, you know, you had Brent sort of riding you, you know, for 9 months to a year about. So he was kind of saying, hey, this thing's real. We should really take a look at this. But the other thing I remember, and we were talking about this stuff here, is that especially kind of older guys that were maybe, you know, born in the late 40s, early 50s, the amount of technology those guys had evolved with, which is when their career starts, they're using teletype or something like that, or sending letters, and then now they're, you know, you're using phone calls, and then you're starting to get faxes, and now they're doing emails. Yep. So this is, to them, this is no big deal. This is just like, great, we're finally getting efficient here. And the younger ones just kind of worried. They're like, I don't think they're going to go for this shit.
Well, it's adjusting with the times.
Yeah.
If you don't, you're going to get left behind.
Yeah, we're continuing. We're innovating. He's always moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you don't, you're just, yeah, you'll just get left behind. And then I'll, you know, yeah, I've got to continue. And I always, every day, wake up, I got big shoes to fill. But to think of, you take a job now, how fast I can do it. When I say I, you know, me and the guys.
I know what you mean.
With the technology, the plasma table, the press brakes. I mean, that's been a game changer for us as well. We actually just bought a new one. Super excited. But to, you know, how they did it, I mean, it's night and day difference.
It's speed things up, and it actually is really safe because now they have these guards around everything, and you're not going to get your hands stuck.
Yeah.
And not to say it can't happen, but you can take what would be more of a regional or even smaller shop, and you've got, like, you know, manufacturing-level gear in there where they can really put a line together, and they're just banging stuff out.
That's what we do now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty much. We try to have a minimum of two of each machine.
Mm-hmm.
Like right now, our press brakes run, you know, almost nonstop.
Nonstop.
You know, we're doing 410s.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those things where, yeah, we had saw an opportunity and did the investment and bought a new, bigger press brake, and we're just going to start making parts.
For the boxes you're making, I mean, imagine you're you're using those constantly.
I mean, that and a few other companies that we do stuff for.
Yeah.
We make just, like, you know, thousands and thousands of, like, wear parts and stuff.
Yeah.
But the cool thing is I'm trying to get to the point where I don't have to outsource.
Like, right.
I can do everything in-house.
Integrating.
Yeah. Because when I have to outsource, I'm relying on someone else's time frame or someone else's schedule where I can have more control of it when it's, you know, in our shop. So we were doing the plasma cutting. Then we started outsourcing to laser companies. Well, now we've bought a laser. So hopefully that'll be up and running pretty soon. And, like, you know, press brakes we've always done. But we've gotten some that are now computer operated. Yeah. So you don't have to go turn a dial on the side or manually set the back gauge. It's all just, you know, buttons.
Dialed in. And so, which is a good segue to kind of where Brizos might intersect with your company, which is ultimately when you are vertically integrated the way you want to be, there still needs to be cost inputs and material inputs. And how can that be delivered to a company as quickly as humanly possible? And that's from Bryzos's perspective is much of the objective, which is how do we get into your hands as quickly as possible a number so you can go win a job? Mm-hmm. And once that job, if you win it, if you're awarded the job, how can you quickly procure that material and get your systems going as fast as possible? Mm-hmm. And I believe we met at FabTech.
Yep.
And tell us quickly about the story. You don't have to go into too much detail, but it was right when we released this new product called Gone in 60 Seconds, and you came walking by because we had Matchbox cars, I think.
Yeah,
or were they Hot Wheels or Matchbox?
The little Shelby cars.
Yeah, we had Eleanor.
Yeah, Eleanor, yeah.
Was out there, and you were like, I'd really like one of those. I'm sure your software is cool and everything, but really just want one of those.
Yeah, so that, I was there for the free stuff.
Yeah, no, and you're in good company. Yeah. I mean, I'm not afraid to stroll around that place. And so what was your, I think you were talking with Lee
that day.
So what happened when you guys were there?
So walking by, of course, first time at FabTech, taking it all in, realizing how much we're in the dinosaur age with some of our equipment. But I see this little Eleanor Matchbox car, and there was like four or five left, and I just kept eyeballing it, and Lee said, hey man, do you buy material? And I was like, yes.
You're like maybe.
Does that car come with it? And so he starts explaining to me, you know, and I'm at first like, all right, I'm just gonna listen to this spiel. Yeah. I'm gonna get that car.
Well, yeah, just talk at me for a few minutes and I'm walking away.
But then as he started talking, I was like, oh shit. I can recall sometimes I'd send out an email for material pricing. It may be a couple days before I get anything back. And at that point, I'm, you know, on to the next project and stuff like that. But, yeah, it was something simple. I needed, you know, at the time I had a job that I had not ordered the material for.
Mm-hmm.
We typed it up, real-life pricing, and it was almost $20 a joint less than what I was getting quoted from my normal suppliers.
I probably got your attention.
Absolutely.
Pretty quickly. And I'm going from memory, but didn't you spot, you spot checked as you called?
Oh, yeah.
Your buyer?
Yeah, I did. I saw it and I was like,
standing right there, because I think I was probably looking for merch from someone else, and I walked up kind of as that was occurring.
I was like, there's no way. I was like, this just can't be. I'm like, they probably got these numbers fudged just to promote this thing or whatever.
Right.
But I make a phone call and I call my rep and I was like, hey, yada, yada, yada. She was like, no, this is what I can do it at. And I'm like, so you can't do it at this price? No. I was like, all right, thanks. And right then and there, I was like, okay, I need to place an order. I mean, because I had the job already in the shop. So yeah. I knew it was coming. And ever since then, yeah, it's just the real-time pricing and just being able to order it.
And we've talked, and we were talking before, that there are other products you wish that were in there so it could be more of a rope, like for the, you know, we kind of cover the center of the bell curve, kind mm-hmm. of the most common items, and then I'm going to say exotic, but you know what I mean, as we kind of get away from the center, but something we're doing is constantly adding products, so we can talk more about that. But the other thing, I don't know if you and Lee talked about it, but it's the fact that this next release, which is due out June 1st, the ability to upload this bill of material and have it instantly priced. So something that could have taken, you know, upwards of a day or two.
Oh, yeah.
Can be happening. And I timed it. It took about 12 seconds,
mm-hmm.
which is an interesting thing, because buying is not something you necessarily want to rush through, because that's where we say we make our money. But it's also, especially for fabrication and welding, you still have to go make something. Yep. So it's like, how much time, the more time I can, if there are no other sacrifices, can I get this bought mm-hmm. and get out there where we know how to add our value, you know? Mm-hmm. So anyway, the reason I bring this into digital is because that's where we're trying to, as Bryzos, trying to bring together is be a good input for fabricators. Whether it's just like, let's say you're just cranking out estimates mm-hmm. and you're not really necessarily buying anything per se, but how do we give you, you guys didn't generally get into fabrication welding to be, you know, estimating experts. You just found out, like, oh, this is a big part of this job. Yeah. I got to be doing a lot of estimating.
You don't get to just build stuff. You have to go through the steps.
Yeah. This is no longer just a hobby.
Yeah,
this
you got to get the job first. Yeah.
Yeah, the fun part, well, at least interesting thing about things that you like to do, it's like, oh, I'm going to turn my hobby into what I do, and all of a sudden you're like, it's a lot more fun when this was a hobby.
Yep.
It's a lot more fun. So, you do have on your mind, how do we vertically integrate our systems and our capabilities over time to be a more self-sustaining fabricator, welder? And do you have actual steps in mind? You're talking about the different, you know, creating assembly lines, having basically redundancy. And as far as your systems that run alongside that, like ERP systems or inventory management systems, or anything like that?
I don't. We're sitting here talking about technology, new school and stuff, but that's something I still will be old school. Just get out and do it and do it right.
And what do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, yes,
like
you got
cycle counting inventories and.
So because a lot of our oil side stuff is, you know, one-off jobs and everything. So that's just, I don't really keep the inventory on those cable tab boxes. You know, I'll keep some in stock just so we can have them when customers need them. But no, it's really just go through the steps and, okay, this is the job that's got to be done. Just go out, cut the material, bend it, you know, build it and ship it on out and make sure it's done right. As far as like, there's not a lot of calculations I do in a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
There's certain things that I'm like, hey, guys, this is a time and material job. Let's keep time on it. You know, so we'll do time cards and stuff like that for mm-hmm. those jobs. So that way it's like, hey, customer knows this is, you know, what you're getting and all that. But I don't know.
You don't really have inventory. It's per job.
Right. And you kind of maybe have a boneyard, a boneyard that you can draw on, but in general, you're not keeping like SKUs of inventory
mm-mm.
per se. You're getting it built. You're costing things out, and as you build them, and so the stuff that you have laying around perhaps is not even worth inventorying because it doesn't have any cost in it.
Well, it's leftover. It's drop. Drop material. Mm-hmm. And we're not on that type of scale.
Yeah, it's okay.
At least not yet to where. I mean, my office personnel is me.
Yeah.
And I do have an assistant part-time now.
Mm-hmm.
My wife worked for me for about a month, and then she quit. But, you know.
she's like, this shit feels out of order. She's like, I think you're bossing around all too much.
No. She came in. She helped me got organized.
She did.
But,
okay.
Yes. Hopefully we'll be there one day.
Yeah. Well, you will. It takes time and you don't want to get it. You don't want to go headlong into systems that don't make sense, you know, mm-hmm. where you've got everyone doing something a certain way and you find out downstream that it's causing some other complication. And, you know, it's, as you said earlier in the conversation, there is an element here of if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So what's the right amount of, you know, proactive future-proofing something? And it's something that happens, in my experience, you know, on kind of a modular basis, mm-hmm. which is you're going to fix this piece. Kind of like you're doing with your machines, right? You have this piece, mm-hmm. and, you know, when those ever sort of reach harmony, you're like, okay, now I can go pay attention to that. And who knows when that sort of, it's not easy.
Oh, we're growing and expanding for sure.
Yeah. So we talked earlier about motorcycles, which mm-hmm. I wanted to turn to okay. because you said that, did you say you used to ride?
Race.
Off-road. Okay. Off-road. And we're not talking motocross. We're talking like trail.
Yes,
woods kind of stuff.
Hair scrambles, enduros.
Okay, so how'd you get into that? Was that with your dad or?
No, I did that on my own
back long
time ago. Oh, gosh. Me and my brother had an old RM80. It was our RM100 years ago. And then I guess right around high school, I went and bought my own dirt bike and started my own thing and started doing it. And then he got into it with me when he...
What kind of bike did you...
So I started on, I guess...
You know, it was a TTR 125.
Yep, and then did the little 85. You went and to the KTM then 85. Went to, yep, the KTM and...
back to Yamaha.
Yep.
Went those back are Kawasaki's two, first.
No, Yamaha, then KTM. Okay. Then we went back to Yamaha with a like a YZF 250, and I enjoyed it because I was spending time with my dad.
Yeah.
I wasn't the best, but I did okay.
You did?
Well, so, yeah. So what's the, are you doing jumps, and or are you just going like banking through trails and...
Pretty much just banking through trails and stuff. Yeah. I mean, mm-hmm. and there was some, I mean, it was all over the place. Some of them were at motocross tracks.
Were they?
So you ran the track and then they dump you off the track and then into the woods and back around. It could be a 5 mile course, 8 mile course, 10 mile, 12 mile course, you know, to do one lap.
This stuff is so fun.
Mm-hmm. What was that one we did in Oklahoma? How many hours?
Oh,
that
was the 9 hours, the off-road cup.
Okay, 9 hours, yeah.
Yeah, it was a 3-man tag team.
Really?
And you rode for 9 hours. Oh, they do 24-hour races, too.
It's like Le Mans.
Yes.
Le Mans.
Yep.
Depending on where you are in the world. Yep. So how long? So you did that for how many? Like, you did that for like 20 years?
Well, I quit racing when the kids were born. When I had little ones at home, I was like, okay.
What am I doing?
Time to put the toys away and, you know, take care of family. And, of course, mm-hmm. you know, I had working at the shop, too, you know. Mm-hmm. With my dad and stuff, and then you were, I don't know, we'd moved to Sugar Land already. You were probably about
nine or 10.
I don't know. Anyway, I showed him an old VHS tape mm-hmm. of me running through the woods, and I said, does this look like fun to you? And he's like, yeah, it does. So we got right back into it. Yep, when the kids were older.
You just like pulled the tarp off it kind of thing? And
Yep. No, we had to start over because I sold everything.
Yeah.
Oh, we had to buy bikes,
I can't have
gear.
It near me. I'll use it.
Yeah, yep. No, we had to start completely over. And that was in 2002?
No, because I would have been 12, 13. At that
well, then you must have been that age then.
I just remember the first bike was Christmas, and then we had the little toy hauler.
Yep.
Oh, or it was actually like a trailer that just, you know, had bed and stuff in it. And then, you know, kind of just upgraded from there. And I guess it was one of those things, you know, see how well I liked it.
Yeah.
And then he actually was doing really good because, you know, because of his age, he got to be in the older class.
Oh, you were the old geezer?
Yeah. So, but he was still young, you know, so it was like, hey. And
you're in the young bracket of the old division.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And then at one of the ones that had, like, jumps with it,
mm-hmm.
I remember I was 15 because I had my permit.
You didn't have your driver's license yet.
And so he was racing before me. I'm just hanging out or whatever, and you hear the ambulance and everything else, and don't think nothing of it. Everybody comes in, don't see my dad. Like, oh, shit. So then I finally go up there. Yeah, he's sprawled out. His foot's twisted the opposite direction.
Oh, my God.
So,
from a jump?
Yeah, I just – when I – afterward, it was right at the finish line, actually. Yeah, when I fell over, the bike was on top of my leg, and – I kept rolling and the leg didn't. So.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, it was pretty ugly.
Was that screws and stuff in your leg kind of thing?
Oh yeah,
man, that must have hurt something.
Several
fierce.
Operations. Actually, wasn't that for me? It wasn't that bad. I don't know if I was in shock or what, but
yeah, you always know when you've really messed yourself up when like it looks awful, but it doesn't hurt that bad.
That's exactly what happened.
You're
That's
like
exactly what happened.
Wow, I really messed up this time. I really messed myself up. So I'm going to bring us back in as far as I want. How do people find you guys that are in the area? What's your website? How do they reach out to you guys?
So we do have a website,
mm-hmm.
TJWeldingAndFab.com.
Okay.
We got basically all your social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram, a couple TikToks, you know. But, I mean, we're out there. We don't advertise too much.
Mm-hmm.
Just because we've been very fortunate of how busy we've been. And I think the website is what I think is
that good. And word of mouth.
Yeah.
A lot of our big customers say, hey, this is a good quality shop. Go check them out.
What is something you would like to build during during your period of running, TJ, what is something that you'd be like, God, if we could do that, that would be fabulous from a build standpoint? Like, there's like anything out
a
there?
Product?
A project, or? A product, or something that's like, man, that's
well,
just.
Well, we did that yeah. cool project together.
It was his side by side.
Okay. Tell me what you guys did.
So he bought his side by side. I say it was his midlife crisis, you know?
Yeah. It's just like a Polaris type.
It's like a Baja runner type.
Oh,
thing.
It's,
yeah.
No,
it's,
joke.
It's a big one. Yeah.
So the dirt bikes have been put away.
Right.
They're collecting dust. And this is what he does now. And he needed to downsize his camper at the time.
We're talking like dune buggy almost, kind of.
Kinda, it is a Polaris Razor 1000 Turbo S.
Okay,
that's what it is.
Okay,
but it's all aftermarket cage and the interior and
oh, it's awesome. It's
okay, so this was
like a mini trophy truck.
Okay, almost. I'm with you. Like the Ivan,
you know,
Stewart,
with the suspension. With the suspension, it's like you
36 hit it inches of travel.
Exactly.
On it.
Exactly.
Yeah, it just comes down like.
Like on a cloud.
On a cloud. So you guys started with a stock or?
No. So he bought the side-by-side.
Uh-huh.
And he was showing me all these. It would not fit inside of his camper.
A toy hauler.
It's toy hauler. It was too tall. Okay. So he was looking at these racks that you could buy, put in the bed of your truck, and then it, you know, goes up on it. And I was like.
Like a spare tire would hang? Like
pretty much, yeah. And okay. I was like. I can do it better. And he's like, okay. So that was like our project. That was like one of the last projects we've really like did where he was in the shop and everything. And so took some ideas, ran with it and used the plasma table, cut out, you know, parts and sawed up all the material. And we built a badass heavy duty. Like he even did it where it's got drawers and stuff at the very bottom. So he mm-hmm. can put all his bags and they'll slide all the way out. And
so tell me, how do you get this? So I'm thinking of like, what size truck do you have?
A one-ton dually.
Okay, you have a dually. So you've got a lot of truck there mm-hmm. to deal with in yes. the first place. So this is something that you are just putting kind of the front tires in and lifts it up? Or
no, you're driving all the way up there.
You're driving mm-hmm. all the way up
yeah,
there.
Yeah, it's like multiple tiers. And yeah. then so when it stops, the front, which I, you know, we mounted a winch and everything on the front. But the front tires are essentially over the cab.
Got it.
Like yep. over your head, the driver's mm-hmm. head.
Okay. And, yeah. But it's all braced up, bracketed up. That mm-hmm. it's like a lock system for
yep.
for a pretty railroad much. Getting it mm-hmm. up there. Mm-hmm. And how long did it take you guys to make that?
I mean, it was off and on.
18 yeah. months kind of thing?
No.
A
couple months.
Yeah, probably 2 or 3 months.
Well, so have you seen something like this before?
We just had an idea. I saw one online.
Uh-huh.
And I've...
You're like, we can beat that.
Well...
Or that thing costs an arm and a leg.
I was going to buy it. Actually, I was going to buy it. And yeah. then he's like, no, bullshit, Dad. We're going to build that thing. So we turned it into a father-son project.
That's awesome,
and,
guys.
You know, we talk cool. about the technology and stuff. I mean, I'm out there with my chalk and my pencil and paper.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to... figure all these degrees and everything out, and he's on his computer over there, you know, just doing it differently. Yep. He's doing a drawing on the computer, and I'm drawing it on paper.
Right.
So it was kind of neat.
And if you kind of,
we put some old school with some new school and came up with this.
Well, if you have pictures of it, I'd love to.
Yes,
we'll put them up so it shows up as we're talking about it. That sounds like a really fun project. More just for you guys than even mm-hmm. commercially.
It was fun.
I like commercial-wise, like I enjoy all of the jobs that we do.
Yeah.
I really enjoy working with stainless when it comes to TIG welding. My least favorite probably be aluminum just because mm-hmm. of how soft it is. Yeah. But so, yeah, when you asked that question, I kind of had to go to a project per se more than an actual like paying job. Because
I'm you loved it.
Oh yeah, I enjoyed every bit of it. And then after that, we did build your windshield.
Oh yeah, yep. for the Razor.
We built because it came when he bought it from the guy. It had a custom roll bar.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they don't make a window for that.
Right.
So I went out there, took some measurements, then used my computer, make some brackets, basically do it to make it, you know, customize it. So. Mm-hmm.
So when does, you know, you see these side-by-sides, when do those actually become a car? what makes those not a car?
Mine's actually street legal. Yeah.
Is that what makes it a car?
You can plate them. Not in Texas, you can't. But some states you can get.
I think Missouri it's an LSV, low speed vehicle.
Yes.
Is that how you guys have things like 35 we have
all,
miles?
Mine has a Texas off-road plate.
I got one of those low speed vehicles.
Yeah. Yeah, you do.
I bought a little electric car.
You did?
Yeah.
For just like, is it for transportation or
it's for shits and giggles.
It is.
I was at an auction to buy one piece of equipment.
Yeah.
Got that piece of equipment a lot less than what I had prepared on spending.
I got money I ain't spent yet. You know,
well, I was like, let's just see what it does.
Yeah.
It's literally like a glorified golf cart, but fully enclosed, you know, from China or whatever.
Yeah.
You turn it on and it talks to you in Chinese.
Yeah, right. Okay.
But I went and got it street legal because I was like, dude, I'm going to drive this thing back and forth to work.
It's fun.
We live in a small town. So I'm, mile and a half mm-hmm. is the max. So, yeah.
But you're not popping wheelies in that.
Oh, thing. No.
No, not at all.
How fast is the Razor now?
Those
things get up and go.
I think I've had mine to about 98.
Yeah. Did you feel like that was fast enough? Like
that's pretty fast.
Like where the steering's kind of getting a little getting a little shaky.
Yeah. I don't know, though. It drives. It's just because of the suspension.
Yeah,
it just drives.
So what all upgrades did you do to it?
Oh my god, it came with a lot. It came with a lot.
Okay,
yeah, I bought it like that. It's not fully built.
Okay,
but it does have the longer travel,
mm-hmm.
wider front A arms.
Yep.
The wheels, they're offset fuel wheels, not Polaris wheels.
Right.
The K aftermarket cage. It's got a chopped, you know, cage on it, which is probably the best safety feature you can have on one of those.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the harnesses, the five-point harnesses.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so what had been done to the engine? Or is that thing just haul ass off
No,
the
it
shelf?
Just hauls from the factory like that.
I mean, it's essentially a 1,000cc engine.
Yeah. It's
turbocharged.
168 horsepower, I think.
And do you hear the turbo spinning up like?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
that's the best. It's sweet,
cherry red.
Oh, you'll lift.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. You'll lift. You step on it. You know, if you're in the right mode, it literally lifts you. And then when you let off, you dive back down.
Really?
It's because of suspension. It's
pretty cool.
Yeah.
So it's feet of suspension on the front and back.
That's mm-hmm. Where do you run it? Just
Colorado.
Okay.
I go up there every year.
And just scream.
Well, we do a lot of mountain riding. I'm doing the
more of a crawl than a sprint.
Yeah, yeah.
Understood. Well, I'm going to wrap this up today, guys, and thank you so much for coming and mm-hmm. telling us about your business, about your family.
Yeah, thank you.
And thank you. Appreciate it.
All right, thank you.